Lafayette Radio, shortwave radio this week, and also on the Associated Press, carried a story. Moscow accuses the United States of ordering a coup attempt by the Solidarity Union. And they have papers that they grabbed with a list of people that would be arrested. And they claim that the CIA was planning a coup and that they were going to use Mr. Walesa and Solidarity to try to get the Russians off their back. Now, the whole thing is ridiculous because even if they had a coup, these people aren't industrious enough, or motivated enough to make up that $75 billion debt they have. And to tell them that an armed coup would be the answer, a direct armed coup, is ridiculous. The Soviet Union accused the Reagan administration of issuing direct instructions for an armed coup in Poland. This is Associated Press. And they said that Ronald Reagan describes the Solidarists as freedom fighters and denounced martial law as a crude interference in Polish domestic affairs. And the Soviet Union said this is ridiculous, that Washington is making up stories that they were planning a coup and interfering with Poland. The CIA was interfering with Poland. Now, I think that the Polish story goes way back. There was one article that said the Polish problem began 25 years ago. It didn't begin 25 years ago. This is an article that was in the Sanse Mercury today on the stalemate is over in Poland. The crisis is brewing 25 years. It goes back much further than 25 years. It goes back to 1919 and 1920. And the desire to take the Soviet Union has been on the minds of the Americans and the British, the French, and many countries that would gang together if they could and wipe out the Soviet Union. They have whipped themselves into such a condition that they believe that this is the only way to go. Now, this kind of paranoia or fear, I believe it's a paranoia. I am not afraid of a person unless I poke them so much that they get mad. And then when they get mad, they have a reason to strike back and they fulfill your prophecies or your worst fears. This kind of thing is happening right now with the president, Ronald Reagan, and the cabinet with Gaddafi. We are big and they are small. Gaddafi is small. Fidel Castro is small. What we really fear is that their message will spread to other people, but we attack them in such a way that we glorify them and give them that David Goliath complex, and we push Gaddafi closer to the Soviet Union. And we have built up this crisis in Libya to such a point that the White House has actually become a prison for the President of the United States. There was a social column in the Washington Post, the Monterey Herald today, a wet blanket on Washington parties. And this is a social thing about the Christmas parties. And they mentioned Gaddafi six times in six different paragraphs, beginning with, after Washington, D.C., Gaddafi is casting a long shadow on the nation's capital at Christmas time. And that tells about the First Lady can't go to the National Presbyterian Church because the congregation having metal detectors and so forth would embarrass, and the congregation said they didn't mind, but she won't go. The next paragraph, rumors of Gaddafi hit squad is affecting people. And then the very conservative Senator Jerry Denton from Alabama had a party for Alexander Haig and Mr. and Mrs. William French Smith, the attorney general, and his wife, and the subject of Gaddafi upset them. Then another White House reception and talks about Gaddafi with David Brinkley and Mike Deaver. And then at the Morocco embassy, a party, and the publicity buildup about Gaddafi and Mrs. Annenberg and the problem of Gaddafi. And then another paragraph at a party, the famous Arno de Borchgrave, who works out of the Georgetown Institute at Richard Allen's CIA hotbed that he founded, that's funded by the Mellons. And de Borchgrave said that Gaddafi is funded by East Germany and Russia, and that Libya has twice the number of tanks of the entire French army, and that Russia sold them as many as the entire British Air Force, their airplanes. Well, they have as many tanks as the French and as many airplanes as the British, and he's saying it all came from Russia. Then they go on, and Arnaud says that he suspects that Gaddafi had a role in killing Sadat. The headlines all said the CIA knew in advance. The CIA knew 2 days before. It knew 2 weeks before. There are many reasons to believe that the people in the CIA could, we know they could have stopped it or protected him, that there was a conspiracy in Egypt, but now they still want to blame Gaddafi for that, like they still want to blame Fidel Castro for killing John Kennedy. Then they tell about a symphony ball and the problem with Gaddafi. So Gaddafi, in the social column, every single paragraph is mentioned. There was a marvelous cartoon out of the Miami News you might have seen this week of the White House with Santa up above and the reindeer flying over, and somebody is saying, "Open fire, it's the Libyan hit squad." And another cartoon of a man reading a book on the CIA attempts to kill Fidel Castro. There is a whole book out called The Fish is Red. And the wife is reading Libyan Hitman and Ronald Reagan. And he's saying to her, "No sweat, aren't the Libyans trained by our ex-CIA agents?" Meaning they didn't get Castro, so they'll probably miss Reagan. But there's a lot of double entendre here and jokes about it, but it isn't really very funny. And the news on the Gaddafi story is so unreal that I just took some main headline stories, not the details, to run down for you, just to show you what came out just in 2 weeks. Starting, actually, when this was December the 6th, hit squad denied in Libya. This story is produced by the CIA Fantasy Farm. On the 8th of December, new plan under review to oust Gaddafi. Wall Street Journal, Ronald Reagan figuring how to oust Gaddafi. The next day, the Believe It or Not show, a new standard of incredibility from the Washington Post on how would Gaddafi try to kill the president. Next day, economic sanctions planned against Libya. Ronald Reagan's getting mad. That's the Washington Post. Then Washington Post again. Arabs say Washington exaggerates the danger posed by Gaddafi. And the world is beginning to notice that it is slightly exaggerated. The following day, the 10th of December, doubts are expressed on the Libya hit team. Furor and uproar were orchestrated, according to the Los Angeles Times. Now, that is about as much as calling Ronald Reagan and the administration liars. The Arabs don't believe it. Americans don't believe it. The Washington Post, the LA Times are carrying big stories, doubts on it. The next day, warning to Gaddafi sent by the president. It's like a tennis ball or ping pong ball going back and forth. One side doesn't believe it, and the president and Haig keep defending themselves against something, and the other side is saying, "We don't believe you." The next day, the Libya leak hurts the president and discredits the nation by Joseph Kraft in the Washington Post. Then, Haig headlines. Haig tells the Europeans of a stand on Gaddafi, Washington Post. He tells them they should be getting worried and concerned. The Europeans don't believe the hit squad story at all. The next day, Libya vows not to buckle against the acts of aggression. Libya speaks up. "We're not afraid of you, and there's no truce to this, and we don't have to apologize for anything." The next headline from the Washington Post, CIA traitors plotting to kill Ronald Reagan. Oh, pardon me, this is the New York Post. It's got a picture of Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple. The CIA traitors want to kill Reagan. Well, this is what I said last week. If the CIA-trained people are killing him, then George Bush of the CIA would become the president. So if the CIA is killing Reagan, that's as open as saying John Hinckley Jr. worked with CIA and Nazi Party in California, in Lubbock, Texas, in Fort Worth, Dallas, Tennessee, Chicago. He was in Ohio and so forth and up at Yale University, New Haven, and New York and Washington. So what else is new? The CIA tried to kill Reagan in March, and they're trying to kill him in December. Now Reagan gets mad. Reagan bans travel to Libya. He urges Americans to evacuate. He urges them. This is Los Angeles Times. These are all front page stories that I'm citing off the headline. The next one, need 60 days to quit Libya, the oil firms say, Los Angeles Times. Then Haig links the move against Gaddafi with moral anger, and he says the U.S. will no longer back the double standard or the skepticism in Europe. Now, there's nothing the United States can do about skepticism in Europe. They smell a rotten story when they see one. They smell a phony story. And Haig is saying, we can't have a double standard. If you're our friend, you've got to be angry like us. And the Arab nations and the Europeans are not scared, and they're not angry. And Haig is up there shaking his fist. Next headline on the 12th of December, U.S. firms apparently intend to remain in Libya, and they're backing down. Then, Reagan rhetoric backfires, role in Libyan terrorism points to the Americans, not the Soviets. Where did that come from? The Houston Post and the Christian Science Monitor. There are no more Berkeley Barbs or L.A. Free Press or Alternative Press or The Realist. They can't say, oh, those leftists printed this. Now we hear Reagan rhetoric backfires and the terrorism is Americans and not Soviets. And establishment papers like the Houston Post and the Christian Science Monitor. Next headline, U.S. border agents are sent data on suspected Libyan hit squads. And there's pictures of these men, Mr. Abbas, Shafik, Schweissman, Yuma, Haya, Carlos's army. And Jack Anderson said some pictures were given to him and he released them. And Haig said, now this is Alexander Haig, and I'll give you the headline 1 week later. He said the assassination team intelligence came from a host of sophisticated intelligence collection capabilities. The punchline, I'll tell you now, in case you didn't read a week later, was it came from some schnook in Lebanon who got $550,000 and skipped town with discrepancies in pictures and names. He was the one who planted the story. That's the punchline for 1 week later that we're building up to, that this was just a non-existent group of people whose pictures didn't match each other and different names and different faces. But by December the 12th, they had worked themselves up to such a tune, they're accusing our allies of not being loyal. Gaddafi's holding his own. And Haig is saying the assassination team intelligence, their information, came from a host of sophisticated intelligence collection capabilities, which is one man sophisticated he was to take this team on for $550,000. You have to be pretty sophisticated. The next headline, December the 13th, what is Gaddafi up to? That was last Sunday, San Jose Mercury, and it's one whole half a page, which is quite a lot, with a picture of Gaddafi, and he's got his eye on Ronald Reagan, and there's that cross for his shooting, and Ronald Reagan's picture is in Gaddafi's eye in the eyeglass. And you see the scope, it's like the Minutemen have. And they used to draw during the war that they were going to shoot traitors. Gaddafi's a full half-page picture, black and white drawing, but that isn't all. The next part of the San Jose Mercury is a full page, coping with Gaddafi, threats of Gaddafi and Fidel Castro, San Jose Mercury. So there's a page and a half. And then the next day, Israeli intelligence was the source of the threat reports. First, they said the Israelis, who have the finest intelligence in the world, and all of a sudden the CIA and FBI are leaning on the Israelis for information, and that would give it credibility. Then later we hear it's from Lebanon and not from Israel at all. And the reason I'm going at length to these headline stories is the kind of garbage that this administration is throwing out. But the dangerous thing is that they still have the button. They can get you into World War III, and there's nothing you can do about it. You have put yourselves in a position of denying that assassinations took place, that civil rights leaders were killed, that people like Martha Mitchell were injected, that Dorothy Hunt was blown up. You have accepted, you, meaning the American people, have accepted so much garbage that if he pushed a button and said, Gaddafi is on the White House lawn, we'd panic. And yet, as it unfolds, there isn't a bit of truth to anything they've said since they've been in office or any of the promises they made when he was running for office. Now, the next day, the December 13th, Libya will take the case directly to the American people. And the American people don't seem panicked. I don't hardly hear anyone worried about Libya that I talk to. Then another article, trickle of Americans flying out of Libya, most stay for now. Now, the President of the United States orders them, get out, and they're trickling or they're staying. And that's the trickling down theory of Ronald Reagan's Reaganomics, but they're staying. Then Time magazine has a cover that's on the stands now. Libya's hit team, Specters of Terrorism. Are you scared? And then the New York Times has a full-page ad of the Time magazine, picture of Gaddafi, and in his eyeglasses, there's no Ronald Reagan, there's soldiers with their guns in the glasses. And the title says, The Tension Grows, Rumors of Assassination Teams, CIA and FBI Reports. And then the next, the 17th of December, Americans in Libya resent the order to leave. They're the pawns in a vendetta between Ronald Reagan and Gaddafi, and they resent it. And then further down in the article, they went on to say that they felt safer living in Libya than in the United States. Then a nice one comes, oil companies are paying bonuses to keep crews in Libya. This is the San Jose Mercury. The oil companies are paying the workers $100 a day to defy Ronald Reagan. Now, they may be having trouble in Poland with solidarity and the Polish people and shaping up to obey orders, but the president is going on the line, they're coming to kill me, they're going to get me, get out of there, they're our enemy, you're in danger. The people there say he's a liar. Gaddafi uses the word Reagan is a liar and he's an actor. He's not a leader. The European allies are literally laughing. The oil companies are oil companies. The major oil companies are paying them to work, and the president has ordered them out. Then Senator Howard Baker begins to get off his high horse, and he has a press conference. The hit threat has diminished. And then Ronald Reagan has another conference and says, no, they haven't diminished, that Howard Baker is wrong. I'm still in danger, and I need extra security. It would be foolish to relax. Then there was another article by Kevin Phillips in the Houston Post. Again, not a radical left, a person who is so conservative it's pathetic, who has a long article, Too Much Ado About Gaddafi. And he goes on to say, if the man is unstable, why provoke him? He could blow up all the oil pipelines in the Middle East. If you're dealing with a crazy man, don't provoke him. Even if there were an assassination hit team, keep it to yourself. But he doubts that there is. And he goes on to say the U.S. is making a great tactical error. And this is the consensus among Western diplomats that Ronald Reagan's administration is making a basic mistake in its policy. Oil companies agree, he said. And if you want to do something, don't do what you're doing now because you have to lose face. Either Ronald Reagan has to take, if he backs down, he loses face. And if he takes action, he creates a crisis similar to Iran, a no-win situation. This is from the Houston Post. They said Reagan is acting the cowboy image in Europe that he wanted to get away from, that they accused him of when they all ganged up together and decided to sign a contract with the Soviet Union for their energy and gas. The various countries in Europe, he has this cowboy image. The Western allies believe the White House has erred in handling Gaddafi. Now, this is very important, this chronology of events, because, as I say, when you don't have quality in the White House, when you don't have people with brains, when you have people like Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger and Brzezinski, the proteges of Fritz Kramer, a Nazi in the Pentagon, when you have madmen with one single goal all of their life, to direct all of our economy, all of our savings, all of our air polluted, our energies, our taxes, towards this mania of theirs, they make a fool of us, and we still keep paying them. And we don't impeach them. We don't charge them for the crimes they committed. And there are so many of them. And we let them continuously do it until they work themselves up where they can make policy. And even when the other countries laugh at us, there's no way to pull them out. There are ways, and we could bring these people into impeachment for past crimes. There's so much on the books about them. But there are very few people in America with the vision or the energy to go into them. And then finally, Jack Anderson had a column this week. Columnists cast doubt on the list of alleged Libyan commandos. Jack Anderson said, It's possible that the Hit Squad doesn't even exist. The hardest public evidence of a plot now is being questioned. The White House said we have hard evidence. The informants conned the United States out of $500,000. The CIA and FBI have now doubts of the existence of reported hit teams. Intelligence officials had some doubts, and they briefed members of Congress, and that's where Howard Baker said it is diminishing, is that the FBI and CIA don't have any hard evidence, and there are discrepancies in the pictures and names, and the story now came from Lebanon, not from Israel. And so what is happening? Washington is sitting there afraid of parties, talking about Gaddafi, can't go to church. The president can't light the Christmas tree on the lawn of the White House. The Libyans out around Washington, I doubt that seriously. I think he should go ahead and have a Christmas. He is living with the fantasy he's created, and the fantasy has made him a prisoner of the place where he always thought he and Nancy would be king and queen. There's an article about Nancy in the paper this morning, Nancy Reagan's Ups and Downs with Helen Thomas. That's the woman who was with Martha Mitchell. Martha Mitchell called when she was injected at the time of Watergate. And Helen Thomas had a quotation from Nancy Reagan's, and she says, I think we've done a terrible thing to the young children in this country, to everybody, with the movies on TV, in the news we give them. The things you see on TV or read in the paper, it doesn't seem to be any balance. Well, the reason I read to you the headlines is that they create that news. There is no balance. There is Poland. There is Gaddafi. When Sadat was shot, there was the Sudan. We're ready to send the fleet in there. As soon as we're through with these two skirmishes, we have to encircle Cuba. We've got Cuba on our hands. And then there's Nicaragua, the danger to world peace. And goodness knows what's happening in El Salvador. We have spread ourselves thin to get a war anywhere. And one of the problems is, one article mentioned, if you go to Gaddafi, and if he is off his mind, you have trouble. But the other problem is that when people create their fantasies, like Ronald Reagan and Alexander Haig and Brzezinski and Kissinger, when they create these fantasies and these desires, and they're embarrassed, and their back is against the wall, and everyone is laughing at them, they will create the enemy and the excuse for the war. The economy is bad. There's unemployment. There's inflation. The savings and loans banks are folding. The housing industry is failing. The medical costs are high. This is a country that has had every failure because they have only wanted and allowed themselves that idea that they had to conquer Russia instead of living with Russia. We didn't try to conquer China when Chiang Kai-shek was out, and China is dealing with us and trading now, and there's a huge landmass that we can visit back and forth, and they can sell to us, and we can sell to them. If we want to invade China and build up our economy towards that, that's another problem. But if you want to coexist with that landmass, we can and we do. And if we want to coexist with the other landmass, we can and we would. But this mania has been built up in the minds of these people since the Russian Revolution, since the creation of Adolf Hitler. And latent in Adolf Hitler's policies was an appeal to racism, to raw hatred, to the frustrations people get when they are poor, when they're hungry, when they don't have jobs, and there's unemployment. You pick out certain bullies and you go after them. And so that idea of fascism that Hitler had down and honed so well is always there. The Fourth Reich, with its huge amount of money and its arms and its discipline, always is lurching there. And we put them into power in Spain with Franco and Mussolini and Nazis all over South America and Asia and Hong Kong and Southeast Asia, South America, Africa, waiting again for this great, great battle that'll take place against that landmass. And as long as these people keep that goal in mind, I think this country will just keep declining economically and spiritually and has no future, because that's the only thing that those people in power want, and they've achieved it through any means necessary. And finally, the list this week, at the end of the year, they have the most admired men. Reagan heads the list of the most admired men. And if you've studied the history of the last 30 or 40 years, you could either vomit or cry as you read the list. Ronald Reagan I, always working with the mob, the organized crime, the warmongers, the narcotic dealers, the multinational corporations who were raping and polluting the earth. Ronald Reagan was the first. And then second on the list this year is Pope John Paul II. Both those guys hit a bullet March and May of this year. John Paul II worked for IG Farben and the Nazi Empire at the time at Auschwitz when they were making the gas for the extermination. He worked with the Montini, who was writing passports for the Nazis to spread out all over the world. The Polish Pope was going to be the great inspiration for all these funds poured in there to get their opponent, Russia, out of Poland. They're bankrupt, it didn't work, and the Polish Pope didn't do much to change things there. In fact, it's going to be much worse. He's second. Jimmy Carter is third, the man who said, let's not overreact at Jonestown, linked to the crime syndicate, the Milan Mafia, isn't far from Atlanta, Georgia, and part of that trilateral commission with Brzezinski and David Rockefeller and the Combine that have been very instrumental in keeping native populations in third world down while exploiting the resources of various countries. Reverend Billy Graham, he was pumped up and created by the Hearst family, Randolph Hearst. He was our first big multimillionaire preacher who goes around very closely associated with Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and the far right politically. Number five admired was Edward Kennedy. I guess that's because he skipped out on Mary Jo Kopechne in a car that sunk, or if he wasn't driving it, he didn't speak up. A very admirable Democratic eunuch who keeps quiet over major situations and is a pathetic man praising the solidarity this week and the strife in Poland instead of trying to figure out why they didn't use that $75 billion to get themselves out of these problems. Menachem Begin is sixth most admired. He's turned Israel into the seventh largest manufacturer of weapons in the world. A Jewish homeland manufacturing, seventh largest in the world. Argentina, South Africa, Taiwan, with every Nazi administration, he's number six. Bob Hope is number seven. He's the comedian that entertains the troops when the others get us into war. He keeps them happy before they go off to die for the multinationals. Jerry Ford of the Warren Commission, the man who pardoned Richard Nixon of all crimes, past, present, and future. Good old Jerry on the board of directors now of banks, corporations, including Pebble Beach up here. He comes to play golf all the time. Our multinational, multimillionaire, selected president who couldn't get reelected. Henry Kissinger, the blood brother of Alexander Haig, the Nazi who gave us Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam and Agent Orange, and then moves into the Middle East with the Shah of Iran and leaves Iran in a terrible state with Khomeini and the Middle East on fire. Henry Kissinger, and then Reverend Jesse Jackson, who stood on the balcony when Brother Martin Luther King's head was blown off and didn't say a word, never wanted to know who killed him, never helped the researchers, kept his mouth shut. That's how he climbed to number 10. He's a good boy. And Jesse Jackson could have helped the House Select Committee on Assassinations. He could have asked, who killed Martin? Those are the 10 most admired men in the United States, and you wonder why there are problems with the youth. Nancy Reagan says the newspaper or the television creates the problems. They write about these people, and these people are rotten. And that's where the problem is. It isn't with the kids. It's with the people they should be looking up to that don't exist. The good ones have been murdered or they're awfully quiet, and these are the 10 most admired men. With that, I will say good night to you. I'll be back next week for the last Sunday of 1981 before we begin one more year. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.